Well, the Magi. What do we really know about them, huh? Who are they? Do they have names? What are their names? Balthasar, Melchior, Gaspar. Not to be confused with the friendly ghost. Question. From what gospel do we get their names? What gospel tells us that they're Caspar, Balthasar, and Melchior? Trick question. It's not in any of the gospels. Ha! That comes to us through tradition. We don't even really know how many there were. Three Kings is also from oral tradition. And the fact of the matter is, they're not ever called kings in the gospel. So, whether we call them Caspar, Balthasar, or Melchior, or the three kings, or the three wise men, that's also not in the gospels. All the gospel says is Magi, which implies all those things. Wise men, regal men. We do know, however, that they were men, absolutely positively. Even though it doesn't say that in the Gospels. Anybody know how? Without question, they were men? Because if they were women, or there was a woman among them, they would have gotten there a lot faster because they wouldn't have been ashamed to ask for directions. That leads to the point, though, that whatever we want to call them, however many there were, they are absolutely the first of the non-Jews, the first of the Gentiles or the pagans to come and recognize that Christ did not come just for the chosen people. He came for all people. And all of us are called to come and recognize the depths of God's love in that he became one of us, made himself a helpless babe in a manger so that we would know the depths of his love and we would know that we absolutely have in him a God who knows what it's like to be one of us. Our Lord Jesus Christ. Now the Magi, again this is extrapolation, but scholars tell us that they came from the east, probably in what we call modern-day Iraq, is where they originated from. And in some translations of the New Testament, it does call them astrologers, of course, because they looked up to the skies. And they knew the constellations. And when they saw a particularly bright star that was, according to what they knew, somehow linked to the Jewish scriptures, which they must have obtained at some point. Somebody must have gone all the way to the east and told them about and left them the sacred writings of the chosen people. For they would have gone through the Old Testament prophets like Micah and Isaiah and the rest of them and linked this star with what the chosen people, where the star was headed, it was headed towards the Holy Land, the Middle East, headed towards Bethlehem. They must have, in their learnedness, linked what they knew about the stars to the scriptures that they read. And so they made this journey, and they came because they were hungering for something more. Now, it leads to the question, what did the people in the Arab world, and in the whole world, really, believe before they came to an understanding that there's only one God, one true God who created everything out of nothing? If we do a little research, we'll see that the Arab people believed in multiple gods, so common among the pagans before God broke through and gave them the truth. They believed in, that's where the genies come from, and the genie in the bottle. There were these spirits that one was the god of trees, another one was the god of the sun, another one was god for fertility and the crops, and a god for this and a god for that. Same thing that Abraham's people believed when he was called to make a long journey where God sent him so he could plant him, and from him could come a great people who would know the truth. There aren't all these multiple gods. Let's think about that for a second. If there's more than one God, how can any of them be God? Where did they come from? Who created them? And if they're created, they certainly can't be God. And so the Magi represent the whole pagan Gentile world who knew deep down that they were not being told the truth. There must be a greater truth. God must be reaching out and wanting to really tell us about himself and his nature, to tell us about how we should really live and treat and love each other, to tell us about what it takes to have intimacy and union with him and to be in the center of his will. And so when they came to the manger scene, they said, yes, these people, these chosen people are on to something. The King of Kings and the Lord of Lords humbled himself to become a helpless babe. And they recognized that and they adored. Now, 2,000 years later, we've gone through a lot as a civilization. We've got three of the major religions in the world that recognize. We have in Judaism, Christianity, and in Islam, people who believe in one creator God, all-powerful, who created everything out of nothing, and who wants to have a personal relationship with us. And we, if you're my age or older, we can remember back to a time when we would really call the United States a Christian nation, or at least a God-fearing nation, where people were free to worship according to the dictates of their conscience. And they believed in a God who wanted to have a personal relationship with them, most of us Christian, through Christ our Lord. But in my 60-plus years on this earth, I have seen people who used to believe that, say they don't believe it anymore, or at least cease to do anything about it, stop actively worshiping, stop actively participating in their faith communities, and adopted other belief systems. That's the history of the world, folks. There's always the danger that we slide back down into falsehood. For example, all the New Age stuff that we hear. People will believe in angels, but they won't believe in God. That's no different from all these gods and genies that the Arab people had. Or you'll hear people, and I hear this a lot, do you believe in God? No, I don't believe in God, but I believe in the universe. What does that mean? You believe in the universe? Well, I believe in the cosmos. Well, I believe in the cosmos too. I don't worship the cosmos as God, because guess what? We believe in the universe. The universe doesn't even know it. The universe does not have an awareness, a consciousness. Guess what, folks? You and I are the crowning achievement of God in all of creation. Because we are made in his image and likeness. We have awareness and intelligence, a reason that reaches out to him, that hungers and thirsts for the truth. And we folks who come to adore him in our faith families, in our Catholic Church, to know that he wants to have a relationship with us so badly and to love us so much that he did that for us, that he might get our attention and say, no matter how fractured is your relationship with me or with one another, I can conquer it and heal it. That is the fullness of truth. God became one of us. He became man. A God who wants intimate, loving relations with us and wills that for one another, not just for while we're on this earth, but for all eternity. And we live in mission territory, folks. We're in the midst of people who have these belief systems, and they're hungering like the Magi were for more. They know that there's a truth out there. And we can be like the Magi, to be the ones who pioneer the way, that lead them back to the manger, that lead them back to the cross. Because Jesus is it, folks. I know that's not popular to say because it sounds bigoted, but what are we doing here if we don't believe that Jesus is God, that Jesus is Lord, that He is the way to the Father? Christianity does not hold up at all if we don't admit that and say we believe in it. There's nobody been like Jesus before or after, and there never will be any other one, because He came and He will come again. So when people are hungering for the truth, I always tell them, get to know Jesus. He changed the world. He changed our world. Nobody has impacted us like Him. And I end with this. This is a poem by a Reverend James Allen Francis. Many of us have heard it. It was written about 100 years ago, maybe less. It's called One Solitary Life. And really drives home that there's been nobody like Jesus, because He is the one true God made one of us. Listen to these powerful words. He was born in an obscure village, a child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another obscure village, where he worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never had a family or owned a home. He never set foot inside a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never wrote a book or held an office. He did none of the things that usually accompany greatness. While he was still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends deserted him. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had, his coat. When he was dead, he was taken down and laid in a borrowed grave. 20 centuries have come and gone, and today he is still the central figure for the human race. All the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man on this earth as did this one solitary man.